Last Christmas, my daughters gave my wife and me a kind of bizarre and wonderful gift, a falconry lesson. We took them up on it this month. On a glorious Saturday morning in New Hampshire, I learned to let a peregrine falcon named Scout land on my gloved hand, eat bits of baby chicks' heads from the glove, and then cast her into the sky. It was kind of awesome. So I was fascinated to read Helen MacDonald's extraordinary new memoir, H's for Hawk. As in a lot of memoirs, MacDonald recounts major traumas of her life and her journey from grief to recovery, but all through the world of falconry. We sent WNYC's Sarah Montague to find out more.
MacDonald says it was the hawks first.
I was pretty much obsessed with hawks from before I can remember. I just thought they were the most beautiful things that the world had ever made.
And then it was the words.
As a child, I cleaved to falconry's disconcertingly complex vocabulary. In my old books, every part of a hawk was named. Wings were sails, claws pounces, tail a train. They were magic words, arcane and lost.
Jesses, crayons, rouse,
haggard,
bait,
seal,
imp,
feet,
tearsome,
hooded,
eyes,
yarrick.
I wanted to master this world that no one knew, to be an expert in its perfect, secret language.
These words are Old English and medieval, but falconry is an ancient art, says sporting historian and falconer Peter Devers.
It goes back into pre-recorded history. Archaeologists are always coming up with like a cave painting or something showing a guy with something on their fist. And of course, we falconers say, oh, yes, yeah, that's a falconer.
And Devers says that for as long as they've been part of our lives, they've been part of our imaginations.
Artists and authors and even musicians who have written songs and hymns and all have used birds of prey for a metaphor. Countries have used them as symbolism of the power and the majesty of their country. And, you know, aside from the lion, I can't think of any animal that's been used more broadly by man in a symbolic way than birds of prey.
I kill where I please because it is all mine. There is no sophistry in my body. My manners are tearing off heads.
Which is the terrifying, you know, fascist hawk.
MacDonald says of Ted Hughes' poem, Hawk Roosting.
But actually, when you live with a hawk, they're bewitchingly complicated animals. One minute they're sort of sleek killers, and then another minute they're snuggling up with you on the sofa watching terrible house removal programs.
Hawks' bodies seem made for this duality, tapered with razor-sharp wings, prehistoric talons, and agile heads that are constantly in motion. But when they relax, they fluff up their dense, dappled feathers like giant pine cones in tones of cream and brown and become, briefly, household gods.
They obviously are incredibly self-sufficient. They kill, but they kill without sin. They kill in a way that feels to us like it is part of the natural order.
Catherine Schultz reviewed MacDonald's book, H's for Hawk, for The New Yorker.
There is something about these birds that already seems to occupy this funny liminal space between natural history and fable or mythology. And you look at one of these birds and you think, it is amazing that you're real.
Hunting with the hawk took me to the very edge of being a human. Then it took me past that place to somewhere I wasn't human at all.
MacDonald's book is about the battle that takes place in that space between the metaphoric and the real.
I crept and walked and ran. I crouched. I looked. I saw more than I have ever seen. The world gathered about me. It made absolute sense.
The way a poem makes sense.
And I was just trying to get across that sense of everything existing in an eternal present, that there's no looking forward or looking back, that when you're with the hawk, everything is shockingly apparent and visual and right there in front of you.
I caught this morning morning's minion, kingdom of daylight's dauphin, dapple dawn-drawn falcon, in his riding of the rolling level underneath him, steady air, and striding high there, how he rung upon the rein of a wimpling wing in his ecstasy.
The 19th century Jesuit poet Gerard Manley Hopkins saw in a kestrel hawk, or windhover, the personification of Christ. But the experience of hunting with a hawk is transcendent without mediation, says falconer Peter Devers.
There's such a sense of beauty and power and freedom about it. They're works of art. You know, walk around a hawk, look at it from the top down and the bottom up, and it's just pure beauty. And I think your mind just snaps to theirs immediately, and you want to be a part of their life.
The first time I got up close to a bird and my sponsor let me hold it, I just thought there was nothing, you know, more interesting or cooler. It just gave me this incredible feeling.
John Schwartz hunts his Harris hawk Choco near Millbrook, New York.
Oh, you're looking for food. Should we go back out and hunt? Let's go. It's such a regal animal. And to watch it do what it was created to do, you know, I think it's really fascinating. Now I'm just going to let him go from my fist. We'll see what he does. He's kind of on his own.
The hawk soars silently into a tall spruce. Almost immediately, he's swooping down, intent on his prey.
Oh! 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 That was a dove, and that was amazing.
The dove was lucky today.
So he's back up in the tree. That was fun.
When you're flying a hawk, there's always a kind of weird way that your part of you is there in the hawk.
But this dark and sensuous poem warns that too much love and too much identification is dangerous.
I thought I was so tough but gentle that your hands cannot be quick enough to fly for you and show that when I go at your commands. Even in flight above, I am no longer free. You sealed me with your love. I am blind to other birds. The habit of your words has hooded me.
This seductive melding is the subject of Tom Gunn's Tamer and Hawk and of much of Helen MacDonald's book.
I felt incomplete unless the hawk was sitting on my hand. We were parts of each other. Grief and the hawk had conspired to this strangeness.
She leans on it to make sense of her own grief and to make sense of her life.
The critic, Kathleen Schultz.
And as she herself starts to recover from her grief, she backs away from that position and realizes she's done a disservice to this animal, which is its own thing.
The joy of them is that they're nothing like us. And that eventually is how I saw Mabel. You know, the fact that this astonishing animal, which was so inhuman and so different from me and from everyone else, could live in this wondrously close relationship with me. You know, we were real buddies. We were real hunting partners.
Julie Shope and her husband Alan have formed a similar bond with their hawk. They are also part of the Hudson Valley community of falconers, and this morning they've invited me, along with their friends Daniel and Bonnie Shapiro, to their house by the Hudson River.
It was like taking the kids to college for the first time.
Yeah.
We're watching the release of their red-tailed hawk into the wild. Her name is Zadim.
Which means warrior princess or terror from the skies in a very ancient language.
Zadim certainly looks imperious sitting on Julie Shope's thick leather glove.
We're having the big moment now. Alan has just cut off the first anklet, and he's going to cut off the second anklet, and then she will be completely free.
And she won't know it. She will not know it.
So do you think of your relationship as sort of parental?
Yes.
So this is hard.
Yeah, it is. It is. That motherly instinct definitely kicks in. But you just have to always remember that it's a wild animal that you're borrowing from the wild.
I think falconry at heart is, it's not about control. It's not about subjection. It's about a relationship. And every time you fly your hawk free, it can just disappear over the horizon.
For Studio 360, I'm Sarah Montague.